This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome to episode 229 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, April 6, 2016. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, what's up, my main man?
Oh, just hanging out, doing a bunch of projects this week, a lot of membership site stuff, and putting it all together in my new site that's going to be coming soon. So a lot of stuff, but we got a lot of news this week, no guests, and I've studied some of the news. I mean, I know that you've got a lot that you've pulled from the tavern, so we're going to have a really good in-depth show regarding some of the inner workings of WordPress and some of the things going on.
Yeah, so last week, last Friday was April Fool's, and you know, the people who listen to this show know that I'm not the biggest fan of of that day, especially when it comes to news. We did not do anything special for the tavern. We just stuck to our guns. We published a couple of stories throughout the day. I actually went out on Twitter and said, hey, just in case anyone's wondering, all of our content's legit. We're not messing around with today. But by and large, I didn't participate in the I didn't really look at the jokes that were going on across the web, and I didn't participate in any on my own. Did you?
No.
Yeah. So for the most part, for me, it was just a normal day.
Yep. Same here. I don't even think there was an April Fool's. I didn't follow any hashtags, didn't really get on social media. So it was just April 1st, first day of the quarter.
Yep. Just a normal day, just another April 1st in the books. So our last episode, which was 228, one of the news stories we talked about was W3 Total Cache and how it's not abandoned. It's still being developed by Frederick Towns and his team. And that discussion brought up sort of a side discussion. And you and I, Marcus, talked about whether caching plugins are necessary in today's day and age because of the increases in technology across web hosting companies. Even your budget hosting companies on shared hosting have much better hardware today than they did six, 7, 8 years ago. But we ended up getting a couple of comments, some feedback on our episode from some of our listeners. And I'll start off with Nancy here, who says that she installed Quick Cache a couple of years ago once her blog started getting enough traffic to really slow some things down. But she says that these days, the site gets about the same amount of traffic, so it never occurred to her that the plugin might no longer be necessary until she listened to our show. Imagine that. So she wanted to know, is there a way to figure out whether a site at one time required caching still needs it other than by turning off the plugin and crossing your fingers? And I was thinking about this today, and outside of doing speed and performance test with the plugin disabled versus it enabled, I mean, that's really the only way you're gonna really know if the plugin is having an impact on your site is doing those speed tests, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do that and go to sites like Pingdom, and you can check your load time and even down to each resource as far as, you know, different plugins, different graphics, things like that that load. So leave it on, do your Pingdom, do about 3 or 4 tests, maybe 3 days in a row, take the average of that, take the plugin off, and then do tests for another 3 days and see what the average of that is and how those two compare. And there's your answer.
Yeah, you can even, I know Google has tests that you can look for that, you know, because PageSpeed now is part of their, is in their algorithm for results now. So that's why so many people are twisting every nut and bolt on their site to try and get the most performance they can out of it. So yeah, there's different tests out there, speed test results, but really that's the only way you're going to find out if it's still needed or if it's benefiting your site at all. And if you do that, be sure to let us know on a future episode some of the tests you've run, and you know, let us know if you've determined whether your caching plugin is still necessary or not. I think that'd be interesting to know.
Very much so, and it almost warrants an experiment to get a bunch of blogs on a bunch of different hosts and then run caching plugins versus non and testing the results that you get. That sounds like a in-depth investigative report. I'm not sure I have enough time, but somebody can do it.
And Steve Wilkinson says that he agrees that cash could be a pain, which we talked about, especially while doing development work and for certain other applications. And this gentleman also uses WP Engine and says, Marcus, he wishes that sometimes he could just click a setting and turn it off temporarily. And he says that the staging environment isn't cached, so you can always push a quick copy there. And if you find out it works or you can test it there, then you can push it to the live environment. So a little bit of feedback from Steve on WP Engine and its caching solution.
Okay, Steve, that's true. But if it's something like an advertisement plugin that has to serve up banners that can't get cached, what happens when I flip to the live environment? I'm still back in that mode again.
Yeah, well, I guess so. So,
I mean, you know, it's one thing. I mean, if you're gonna play the blame game and go, "Hey, I programmed it to work, customer. Look, it works on the stage." Well, they don't care. They want it to work on the live. So,
and Panel says that he just got done making a site for an artist, and pages are quite heavy due to the images, even after lots of optimizing. They tried using a caching plugin, but he can't say it helped. And by the way, he said, awesome show. He looks forward to every new episode. So they're going to be running into a situation where somebody tries a caching plugin and either can't tell the difference or determines that it's not really necessary. Who knows what host they're using, but you know, because that could come into play.
And you brought up actually one of the most interesting and valid points in all of page load time, which is optimizing your images. If you optimize your images before you upload them, and I'm talking like backgrounds, bigger stuff, big logos, especially if you're using PNG files, PNGs,
big featured images and all that stuff.
Yeah. Optimize them first. And you can go to sites like tinypng.com and you can just drag and drop an image in there, and you'd be surprised at the savings that you can get by just having it smash down the image. They make a plugin too that you can subscribe to and all of that. But that contributes to more gain as far as page speed than anything. So not server speed, but if you can take your image size on your pages and get it down to half the size, that's going to be twice the load speed. That's more than any cache plugin will ever give you.
That's great advice. And then to take it one step further, if you have access or can afford a really fast CDN, you offload your images and have them served up via the CDN. There you go. That's another way to increase the performance of your site.
Yeah. Now, this is especially poignant in elements of your theme and of your site. And I want, you know, I've never done this, but I wonder if we could take a premium theme and take the images and then optimize them and put them back in again and run speed tests against the same theme.
you mean in case the theme doesn't have, unless they're not already optimized? Is that what
you're saying? That's right. Yeah. And see, you know, like the cleanup patrol, we go in there and sniff around and see what we can clean up. That's interesting. But yeah, that just proves my point once again, that optimized images, you know, help the page load time, make it a lot better experience for the user. And it's something that I think probably helps a little bit more than what a caching plugin would do.
That's probably something I should look into doing more often. Is we upload quite a few images to the site, you know, for the featured image, and then we have images within the article. And for the most part, I'm going to admit to saying that I do not optimize them. I simply take the screen capture, save it as a PNG file, upload it, and I'm done. I could probably do me and my readers service by optimizing the images and trying to shrink their size.
Well, there are plugins.
I think there's one off the top of my head is WP Smush It or something.
Yep, Smush. Yeah, I think that's a WPMU plugin, I think. But yeah, that works pretty well. I use that on one of my MU sites, or multi-sites rather. But yeah, so there's a lot of options, but consider that over any kind of caching plugin.
So there you go. Just some feedback from some of our listeners. Thank you very much for that and for listening to the show. We very much appreciate it. And by the way, head on in the iTunes. Give us a detailed review. We'd appreciate that perhaps even more or equally so.
Yes. And I'm talking
iTunes reviews.
Before the show, Jeff, I just spun around iTunes around the world. I just changed the country to different locations and see, you know, just to see where we rank and all that. We're in the top five in terms of WordPress podcasts around the world. Even in Kuwait, man, we're holding our own.
That's interesting.
But not a lot of reviews. You know, I'm disappointed in my Greek friends that I know listen to the show that don't review. My brothers to the northern Canada, where you at? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not just the Americans we're looking at here. We've got a global audience. We know that. So help us out. Give us some rankings. Give us a little boost in terms of where we place within the podcast rankings. We greatly appreciate it. Also, remember, we're on Stitcher as well, and you can leave comments actually on a episode basis if you go to stitcher.com, and I read all those, so go ahead and post away. But we do appreciate that, so thank you to everybody who's done it in the past and to those who are considering it now.
Okay, so we got a lot of news to get to this week. Yes. A lot of things happening in the WordPress community, starting off with a big announcement today, and that is VersionPress, which is software I've written and talked about before on this show. It's actually a plugin. It's a version control plugin for WordPress, which is built on Git. So what it allows you to do is undo changes. You could create staging sites, merge databases. So you have this interface where it says, so long ago you updated the plugin to Kismet, or updated the Kismet plugin, or you upgraded this theme to this version. And there's a button that says you can undo this, and it'll actually restore the files and states in the database back to where they were. It's a really cool plugin. And during my testing with it, I discovered that it's a bummer that it requires Git, because a lot of web hosting companies, especially shared hosts, they have to have the Git module turned on, and they don't. So they run into this technical limitation. So there's that. But once you get around to using it, it's pretty cool. And I always imagine that at some point, and maybe VersionPress is maybe the path forward to this eventually being a core feature. But I just think it'd be really cool if everybody had an undo button. So, you know, once you get to that white screen of death, by whether you're updating the plugin or a theme, somehow, some way, there's a link, you could just undo it, boom, mm-hmm. You go back to before the upgrade, and maybe back your site up or do something to prepare for the upgrade that needs to happen before you see the white screen. But just the idea of an undo button for WordPress is pretty cool. So that kind of gives you an idea of what VersionPress is. But today they made a huge announcement to where not only did they release VersionPress 3.0 beta, but now it's turned into a free open source hosted project on GitHub. So now it's free for anybody to download and use. There's no more early access program, which was created to help provide the initial funding for development after their crowdfunding campaign last year. And it opens up the door for everybody to contribute back to the plugin, which is one of the main reasons why they've made this decision to go open source. And so they've made quite a few changes, and they had to migrate from, I think they're on Bitbucket and JIRA, something to that effect, over to GitHub. But on GitHub now is where you can get documentation. That's where you can get support, and there's actually a link to where you can talk to them in real time. And one of the things is they're going to be working on some pretty difficult problems when it comes to version control software, especially when you think about making it compatible with the thousands of plugins and themes that are out there that do things to the database that could cause compatibility issues, that could cause conflicts. And so by opening it up to where they can accept pull requests from the community at large, they could tap into the intelligence of all the developers out there and try and solve these problems together. And, you know, it would just be really cool if somehow, some way, now that it's opened up and open source, that these problems get solved. And somehow gets into WordPress core as a feature. And maybe it's not the full-blown what we see in VersionPress feature, but something like it, like an undo button. Because that's just that idea to me is just pretty cool. I think a lot of people would trust auto-updates more if there is a way to either easily roll back or, you know, like I said, had an undo button.
I agree somewhat. I don't think it should be part of core. I like it a lot. Don't get me wrong. I'm afraid of what happens when it gets in core and it gets in everybody's hands because not everybody needs this.
Can you imagine it being in core and then, you know, like you hand off a client site to somebody and they say, I don't like this, undo this. And then the site goes back to this major change. And I can see where issues like that might pop up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of thing where I wish that there were, like, you know, in the movies where they're about to launch the nukes and there's like two guys and they each have keys, launch keys, and they got to turn them at the same exact time.
Yes.
Like, that's the kind of thing I wish you could restrict access to that too. You know, two launch keys, two people have to go, yeah, all right, go ahead.
Well, you anyway. Know, it's just an idea and it's not proposed or anything, but
I gotcha. Yeah. But I mean, I love, first off, the idea that you led off with, which is it would be great to have kind of the in WordPress, the Windows equivalent would be reboot in
safe like a system mode. Restore.
Yeah, well, yeah, reboot in safe mode. Which of these do you want in terms of, do you want to have a bare bones install that doesn't load any plugins or anything but bare bones database stuff?
Or last known good configuration.
Yeah, whatever it happens to be, right? That's what needs to happen in terms of that link. And then you've got security issues. What happens if somebody puts it in there and they've got something injected that was injected 6 months ago? And then they go call it back up, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
You have to. That would be a pain in the rear. So you go to a service like Security and they clean up your site for you. And then you notice something isn't right or something was working before you got hacked. So maybe you roll back to that state and now you've just reinfected yourself somehow. Yeah. That would not be good. I wonder if that's possible. I don't know.
It's got to be. I don't know. It has to be.
Now you got me curious. And after the show, I'm probably going to send an email to Boric and ask him if that's possible. And I'll have to report back on this next week. You've got my curiosity piqued, Marcus.
Well, it doesn't just have to be in version control. I mean, that could just be normal site backups.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too, as well.
So I'm sure that happens all the time.
So congrats to VersionPress. If anyone out there has been following the project and maybe you were putting it off because you didn't want to be part of the early access program, well, now you don't have to anymore. You just grab it and download it for free from GitHub. And hopefully your web hosting provider has the Git module installed and activated, because if not, you can't use it. So you might want to check with your hosting provider first to see if Git's enabled before you go installing VersionPress.
And if they don't have it, drop them.
Yeah, I guess
you don't want that kind of host anyway.
So last week, there was some updates to the BBs, and we're talking about BuddyPress and BBPress, and we'll start off with BuddyPress. And BuddyPress is actually taking a lot of pages out of WordPress's development playbook in that they've started to have release leads per version of BuddyPress. And David Cavins was named the release lead for 2.6, which is the one that's being developed now. And Mercy Me will be developing or leading the release for 2.7. So we're looking at BuddyPress 2.6 beta around May 25th, RC1 around June 8th, and the official release around June 15th. And Cavins, who is leading release, says that 2.6 will focus on performance, polishing the UI, and a couple of other things here, like maybe working on a new API to manage single item navigation, extending BuddyPress's use of caching to group memberships, and working on a framework for bulk data handling after updates. And there's also one of the other pages that they've taken out of the playbook is that they're thinking about creating these component maintainers. So WordPress has this track ticketing system, and they have all these different components like UI or comments or post and pages, or they have all these different components that make up WordPress. And sometimes you get somebody who's really passionate or has a focus on there, and they end up becoming the maintainer for that component, where they're going to try and do this in BuddyPress. And there hasn't been any specific maintainers or teams identified, but it's something that they're going to look to in the future. And this, of course, would give people an opportunity to exercise leadership skills and owning, taking responsibility of major things in BuddyPress. So that's what's going on in the realm of BuddyPress development. And now, Marcus, I brought this up in the pre-show, and you said you wanted to say something about BuddyPress. And every time we bring it up, you always talk about something with BuddyPress about, why aren't they working on this? Or God. So tell, what is your BuddyPress moment on today's show?
I've given up. I'm turning in my B uniform. Listen, man.
Right, I'm going to say this. Tell us why you've given up.
I don't know one client that still uses BuddyPress. I don't, for God's sakes, the flagship thing that we're all using is the Advanced WordPress group on Facebook. Okay? We're not using BuddyPress to utilize this communication between us. Every membership site and every big speaker that I deal with, they have private Facebook groups. They don't deal with this BuddyPress anymore. They don't want to deal with this anymore. It's all there. The audience is somewhere else. That's the social stream. And I hear all these things and all these improvements, and it's just like, who's using this? And I don't know. Are we spitting into the wind? Are we just clinging to something that used to be great?
Well, there's people out there to use it. I mean, you look at the showcase sites and things of that nature. I mean, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but actually next week, and maybe it'll launch early in the week, but there is a new community website focused entirely on BuddyPress stuff. And yeah, that might answer some of our questions in terms of, you know, some of the major sites out there that are using it. But I think the point you're making here is, you know, we've had Triple J on the show, and BuddyPress has this sort of reputation, even though it's not technically true, that it's a social network in a box. And what you're saying is, no, the social network that people are using are Facebook or Twitter and things of that nature to communicate, not all these various components in this plugin suite called BuddyPress.
In most instances where you have a memberships type site, you use that in terms of the users themselves get all of those little fun things that kind of go onto the back of BuddyPress, which is activity badges and all that other stuff. Most of those membership plugins have that kind of thing now, or LMS systems or anything like that. The forum aspect is, you know, there are plugins that are on Code Canyon that seem to run better in terms of collaborative groups. I would never use BuddyPress as an intranet for a company to communicate on projects. I mean, everybody's just going to Slack now and all that. So I'm just,
so you have, I, you have no idea the market or the users,
or not the anymore,
use case scenarios that BuddyPress is intended for.
Hey, I've been paid plenty of money in my past to put BuddyPress on sites and put user groups together and things like that. Tons of projects. I wouldn't say tons of money, but tons of projects. So I question it. I'm just looking at it now going, what do we do with this thing now? What are we doing? What is this? What is it feasibly used for? And what's the best case scenario in terms of how it's being used?
Well, I mean, I know we can get Triple J, friend of the show, on, and he'll tell us.
I'm sure he will.
He'll probably tell us. We'll give him an hour and he'll fill it.
Give him an hour, he'll take three.
We're just messing around with the Triple J, but
yeah, we love
open him. Invitation. You know, if you want to come on and tell us,
I'm not trying. And believe me, I love Triple J. He's a hell of a nice guy. He's just such a, you know, he's a beautiful man. But
yeah, we're talking about the software, not him.
Yeah, I just wonder what the feasibility of it is, and what's the, I mean, look, if you come to me and go, yeah, we turned every comment stream now is a forum. Okay. I dig using it for that. I think that could work. You know, you've been begging for stuff like that to happen.
Yeah. Yes, I have. You know, and speaking of communication and things of that nature, let's segue into the other BB, and it is BB Press. And there is a post on the BB Press development blog that basically outlines that BB Press 2.6, which is the next major version that's in development right now, you can expect it later this year. But in order for that to happen, they had to punt two major features to the next major version, which is 2.7, and that is BB Press as post comments and forums as taxonomy. So if you were looking forward to any of those two features in 2.6, yes, the time to be disappointed is now. I'm one of those people who are disappointed because I've been really looking forward to BB Press as post comments, because what that does is you can change the comment system in WordPress and replace it with forum replies. So you can sort of merge the two together. Forums where people can have free range to create discussions and comments on articles on the blog, but they're powered by BB Press. It just sounds like a cool integration to me and something I've been looking forward to trying out, especially on the Tavern. But it's not going to happen, at least not this year. But Triple J on the blog says that these two features are fully architected and planned, but they do not have enough progress in code form for them to hold up the release of 2.6. So they're going to be focusing their entire efforts, at least on those two features, for BB Press 2.7. And I covered this post, and it's hard for me not to let some of my disappointment show. But, you know, I said that it may be another 1 to 2 years before BB Press 2.7 is a reality based on the project's development history. And I ended the post by saying, I don't know if I can wait that long. And some of the comments on the article sort of shared my same sentiment in that they did just feel that the development is too slow, or BB Press is lacking in a lot of features that common forum software has today. I mean, if you look at Discourse, I think, is one of the best open source, fast-paced developed forum solutions out there with real-time communication developed by Jeff Atwood. Discourse is really cool. And you've got some of these other platforms out there as well that I don't know. I mean, BB Press is good at what it does. I mean, it's, if you look at some of its biggest benefits, it's a plugin, so it's easy to install. It merges and integrates well with WordPress. It should. It's a WordPress plugin. But if you look at all the features, it just does not compare to what is available out there in these days. And if you look at the development behind it, I mean, I give so much kudos and credit to Triple J and Steven Negger and the gentlemen over there who find the time to contribute patches here and there to the software. But I mean, it's like there's no detailed roadmap that says, hey, look at all these cool features that we're going to be planning. Here's the release cycle we're going to be trying to maintain. There's nothing for me to be excited about. There's no motivation. It just sucks. The whole situation sucks with BB Press. And I've always had this thing for forums and forum software, and I would just like BB Press to be this awesome tool, but it just doesn't have the it doesn't have the energy and the motivation or aspirations. I don't know, the number of people it doesn't have. It's nowhere near like a BuddyPress or a WordPress. So I mean, development is continuing. It's ongoing. It's something that just happens.
What are we getting in 2.6? You went over what's not coming in 2.6.
So, let's see. I don't know. I have no clue. Apparently, a lot of bug fixes, a couple of improvements. but actually, I don't know what's in 2.6. I would have to do more digging, but I was really just concerned with the – I've been waiting on 2.6 for a while just for the BB Press's post comments. So I read the article. I turned into a sad panda.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you start looking like at the BB Press user surveys from 2015, and they have this section on there where you can leave a comment in terms of what you think BB Press needs most or just your thoughts on it. And they pretty much echoed my sentiments in terms of it's not, there's just just a long ways to, there's a long way for it to go, for it to be on par with other forum solutions out there today. I mean, yeah, it's stable and it works and it does what it does, but I don't know. I just, just don't know. So that's what's going on the BB Press front. And I guess once BB Press 2.6 beta rolls around, we'll definitely let you know. But it's not going to have those two features.
Two thumbs down emojis from the WordPress Weekly crew on BB Press. Wow.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna have to get somebody on here or more than two people, and I wanna talk about the future of BB Press because I know Triple J has a passion for communities and forum software, and that's one of the reasons why he's found himself in this position of being a pretty much the leader of the BB Press project. And me, I know it may suck for me to hear all this critique and me bashing the project, but I mean, it's just somebody who's really looking forward to using BB Press. I just feel like, man, I could either use this or I could use something like a Discourse, which obviously Discourse, if you look at it, it's GPL licensed, so it has the same license as WordPress and BB Press. But it definitely has much higher system requirements, and you have to use it on like a Docker service or some weird server setup. So it's not the easiest to install, set up, and use. But if you go visit like wpchat.com, that's actually by Leland Fiegel. That's powered by Discourse, and I fell in love with it. I mean, I just love the ability to notify somebody by doing an @username like you would do on Twitter. And you could do the real-time communication. So if you get quite a few people in there discussing a topic, it goes from a forum to a chat room. There's just a lot of cool things I like about Discourse. And it's like, man, I want BB Press to be Discourse. Maybe we should just fork Discourse and make it BB Press 3.0. But obviously that totally would not happen. It's just something I thought of. It's just kind of a joke, I guess. Anyways, that's... Oh, man. Yeah, you could tell I'm a little bit disappointed with BB Press. So let's talk about some something that maybe some others could be disappointed about. If you're really looking forward to the WordPress REST API, you're going to have to wait longer for it because the endpoints are definitely not going to be shipped with 4.6. But however, there is some good news in that the WordPress REST API team released version 2.0 beta 13 of the plugin. And while it does include a couple of breaking changes, they are planning on adding new features to minor releases in the 2.x series and bug fix releases in the 2.0.x series. But overall, what it all means is they're coming up with a 2.0 final, and it's going to be a lot more stable, and they're going to do away with the changes that break the API, except for the one that came out today. Which we're not going to get into because it's very technical, but they are doing an API change today that's going to break some things. However, they're trying to get everything in line so that they can work on the core endpoints, get some developer momentum behind it, and make a merge proposal for WordPress 4.7. And of course, that's at the end of the year, and that's the one Matt Mulloway is going to be leading the release on. So, you know, I was just kind of joking about this, but what if the stars aligned where Matt Mulloway is leading WordPress 4.6 or 4.7 at the end of the year? And not only will he be able to work on a new default theme, which is going to be the 2017 theme, but he may lead the release that merges the other half of the WordPress REST API, which is one of the killer features that a lot of developers have been waiting for in WordPress. Well, so, Marcus, everyone's going to have to wait a little longer for flying cards.
Yeah, I know. We patiently wait year after year. We wait for Buddy Press to get good. We wait for BB Press to get good. We wait for the WordPress REST API. Someday it will all come together.
That's
we'll be
right.
using the REST API in BBPress for something.
It's quite possible. BBPress API.
Yes.
We've waited this long for it. We can wait a few more releases. I'm not depending on it, so we'll just wait and see. But that would be cool if it came out this year during the 4.7 release. What a Christmas present that would be for developers. Yeah, that's about the time when 4.7 would be released.
Yeah, every coder in the world is going to be neglecting their family during the holidays to learn the REST API.
Yeah, they're going to be doing a different kind of REST over the holidays.
Yeah.
So there's a very important security vulnerability that was patched in a popular role editor plugin. Vladimir Grugila. I butchered that one, but he's a developer of user role editor. This plugin is actually used and active on more than 300,000 sites. So user role editor is used where you can edit, manage, and create user roles and capabilities in WordPress. Now, user role editor 4.24 and below allowed any registered user to gain administrator access. So that's bad. That's pretty darn bad. WordFence, yeah. Now a site that monitors security issues, and actually they have a WordPress security plugin of their own, WordFence, they published some information about why it was vulnerable. And they say that the author was checking if users have access to edit another user using the current user can function, and checking for the edit user without an S on the end capability and a specific user ID. A user can edit themselves, and so sending data to the plugin that supplies the current user's ID to this access check would bypass the check, letting them get administrator access. So all they did was actually in the changelog, they changed, edit user to edit users. Just not using that S opened up this kind of vulnerability. So that was that sucks. So if you are using user role editor, please update as soon as possible, and please do a thorough check of your users because this affects WordPress sites with open registration. So if users can register to your site and you're using this plugin, you're definitely vulnerable to this issue. And I would highly suggest going through your users, checking their capabilities, and double checking, especially seeing maybe using a plugin or some code out there that can let you see which users have certain capabilities attached to them. So you can look for all the ones that have certain roles or certain capabilities that only an administrator should have, and see it, if any user IDs come up that you don't recognize, and alter them accordingly. So just that's a pretty big it's one of those security, you know, usually when you read about security vulnerabilities, it's just all this technical mumbo jumbo about SQL injection and just manipulation of code, but in this case it was just one letter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, how about
bad
that
coding? Who makes that plugin?
I'm not going there, Marcus. I'll just say Vladimir. I'm on a first name basis now.
Okay.
So we have some huge news. Well, I don't know, not huge news, but I mean, we have some pretty cool news about WordCamps because there's some pretty cool data released about WordCamps in the year of 2015. And in fact, there has been a 70% increase in European WordCamp events over last year. Now we know that WordCamp Europe, in 2016, they've increased their capacity to 2,200 because they just keep selling out. Whatever venue they have, they sell out, and they have to keep getting more and more, finding more and more venues that can hold more and more people.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that will be the largest WordCamp to date. And Sarah Gooding actually published this post on the Tavern and outlined the data set for us. And the 10 largest WordCamps, based on number of tickets sold in 2015, and I was going to ask you to guess, but you probably have the show notes in front of you. I don't know if you've seen this, but Well, what's the?
I'll guess.
What's the? Let's start with number one. What's the largest WordCamp in the U.S. based on the number of tickets sold last year?
In the U.S. Miami.
It's a good guess, but you're incorrect. It's actually WordCamp U.S.
Well, I didn't think that would count.
No, of course it did count.
Okay.
Gotcha. But it was WordCamp U.S. So what's this? And this one's not in the U.S., but what's the second largest WordCamp in the world based on number of tickets sold last year?
In the world.
We discovered that we have quite the fan base in this area of the world.
Would that be in Japan?
Yes, close. WordCamp Tokyo.
Yeah, okay.
WordCamp Tokyo is huge. I mean, I think it's another event that had over 1,000 attendees.
Wouldn't they like to fly us out there for the next one so you and I can do a WordPress Weekly from Tokyo?
I don't know, man. I think about that, and that'd be one hell of an experience, but I don't know. I don't know how that would all turn out. I mean,
put a sponsorship package together, people. Yeah. Get us there.
So running down the list, we've got WordCamp Europe, WordCamp Kansai, WordCamp New York City, WordCamp London, Miami, Atlanta, and Orlando. Those are your top 10 largest WordCamps in 2015 based on tickets sold. And, of course, with the number of WordCamps increasing worldwide, the number of tickets sold is also increasing. Now, Marcus, last year we had a total of 89 WordCamps. And so far this year, there's an average of 13 WordCamp applications being approved each month. So it looks like we're going to be probably well over 100 this year, 100 total WordCamps worldwide.
You know my dream, man. That's to be a speaker at like WordCamp Beijing or something like that.
I just travel the circuit, go from one end of the continent to the other.
Oh, man, that would be my dream. That would be awesome.
So it's also interesting to look at the data and see that the split between WordCamps in the U.S. and those outside of the U.S. is pretty even across the board. And we're looking at data from 2011 to 2015, and it's relatively 50-50. Now, in 2015, there were 42 in the U.S. and 47 outside the U.S. So I wonder it's just interesting how that works out. You know, considering just U.S. and then there's everywhere else, and yet we're still come back. It's almost a 50-50 split.
Going back to it, man, I wish I could stream every one of these. I wish I had archives of every single one of these. I don't. We don't. We're losing all this material, all this knowledge. It gets dropped by all these speakers at all these WordCamps.
So other awesome data I wanted to get to is that there were 1,677 unique speakers at all those various events in 2015.
That's staggering right there, man.
2,000
unique people, not just sessions.
Yeah, that was unique speakers.
Wow.
So all this talk about speakers doing the like circuit speakers, maybe there's not a lot of leeway with that considering your 1,677 unique ones.
You could just ask every one of those people to give like a one-page thing about their best tips in WordPress, and you got a book right there.
That's right. Now, you say sessions. There have been 2,135 unique sessions in 2015. That is a lot of WordPress.tv content if it was all recorded and the quality was good enough, you know, between the audio and video to make it on the WordPress.tv. But that is a lot of learning.
That's enough programming to do a 24/7 television station.
For at least a month, I would say.
Oh, the cycle would just keep getting fed with more WordCamps going on.
And there are nearly 900 unique sponsors, so that's really cool. And then, of course, there's a total of over 21,000 tickets sold for all those events combined. One of the interesting tidbits between all this data is that while Andrew Middleton notes that while WordCamps have been steadily growing over the past 5 years, the increase is due to more numerous smaller events. Now, if you start thinking about what the purpose of a WordCamp is, it's to be local to the area. And it looks like that this kind of growth is more in line with that intended purpose. And there were actually a lot of work camps this year were started just based on a meetup group. So that was very cool. So just all kinds of great data that related to WordCamps. If you want to look at that, we'll have it on the show notes page. But WordCamps, man, that's they're a happening thing. And it's great to see that they're increasing. And, man, that's a lot of learning, a lot of people, a lot of sessions.
Sometimes I wish that WordCamps, at least local to me, were every 6 months rather than every year. Like if we had a spring and a fall, or a summer and winter, whatever.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I don't know if there's a limit to the number of WordCamps you can have in the same city per year. But, yeah, if you spread them out 6 months, I mean, that sounds feasible to me. I don't know what the foundation or the WordCamp Central would think about that. I'd have to look into it. But, you know, depending on the size, I mean, like, actually it should be completely doable because if you look at, I think it was a WordCamp Seattle? So WordCamp Seattle had a WordCamp event that was sort of developer-focused, and then they had an event that was user-focused. It was two different WordCamps in the same year, but they serve different audiences. So, I mean, there is that. You could do that. I don't know if that's what you're looking for, just two of the same WordCamps just in the same year.
Maybe one of them's a business track, you know, enterprise, something like that.
So all in all, just great things happening for WordCamps. And one of the last stories I wanted to mention here, and this is all over the news. Have you heard about the Panama Papers, Marcus?
Yes, I have. It's
who has
the Prime Minister of Iceland his position.
How about that? So Sarah Gooding did some research and wrote up a great article on WPTavern.com where it basically looks like outdated and vulnerable WordPress and Drupal websites hosted by the company. It's Mossack Fonseca is the name of the Panamanian law firm. Looks like their websites were outdated. And some of them, she says that the firm was running unencrypted emails through an outdated 2009 version of Microsoft's Outlook Web Access. Some of the websites were using Drupal 7.23, which is a few years out of date. One of the websites was running version 4.1 of WordPress. And if you look at those different open source software stacks, they each had pretty significant security vulnerabilities, especially Drupal, who at one point had a, you know, since the release of version 7.23, the software has received 25 security updates, including that one that in 2014 with the SQL injection vulnerability that was considered the top tier, most priority, you know, oh my God, barbecue type status security event you could have for Drupal software, where they all had to update. They were all vulnerable. And apparently this particular website was not running on a secure version. So there's no indication right now that there's no evidence that suggests that this is they connected these two between the data leak and the insecure software. But the possibility is there, and it's pretty high that maybe that's what contributed to being able to obtain so much data from this firm is through these insecure websites. So, I mean, it just goes to show you, and the point of Sarah's post is that routine maintenance, especially from a security standpoint, should be as foundational to a company's business as, let's say, brushing your teeth or showering for your health. And she says that the Panama Papers serve as a reminder that having, you know, a competent skilled department is critical for a company that deals with sensitive information. And, Marcus, when we, you know, we look at places like, Target had the major data breach, banks having major data breaches, all these different sites and services and banks that you think would be secure and be top-notch with their security. And then we find out, we hear in the news, you know, upwards of millions of people have their data vulnerable because of some breach, because of maybe some insecure software or something. It's maddening.
All right. So let me bring some calmness to this situation here, Jeff. All right, all you WordPress developers and designers out there, I'm talking to you, okay?
take this article on the tavern done by Sarah, bookmark it. Then any time that you go to a client, you tell them that you need to do a monthly maintenance fee on their WordPress site to make sure that everything's up to date, to make sure that it's free of any security vulnerabilities or anything like that. And if they object one iota, you send them that link.
And yeah, say that, your Panama papers are going to be shared.
It's just that. It's like, hey, you want to roll the dice and take the risk that something's going to happen, that some price list in your e-commerce section isn't going to get spilled to somebody else, or you accidentally get a hold of your customer list or something like that due to some security vulnerability. I think that's warranted to ask for a maintenance fee to do something like that. So I hope that everybody listening that's in that position will use that as sort of leverage in order to get that kind of thing, because it's very important, and it helps not only the community in terms of employment and, you know, being able to pay the bills, but also in terms of keeping all of the WordPress installations firmly up to date to help to mitigate any of these security vulnerabilities.
And I wanted to make this point too before we get into our plugin picks of the week, and is that thankfully the media has not reported on this aspect of the story, saying that it's Drupal's fault or it's WordPress's fault or open source software in general is insecure, and this is why these types of leaks can happen. The bottom line is, it's open source software. It's continuously under development. Security vulnerabilities happen. The code's written by humans. But the most important thing is when a vulnerability is discovered and it's patched, the updates are sent out as quickly as possible. And it's up to us, the software, the maintainers, the people, the tech teams, to ensure that we upgrade our sites and keep them up to date to make sure those patches are applied. And as you could see, this firm kept software that was out of date, years out of date. And we know that there's been documented cases of some really major severe security vulnerabilities. So this is on them and their incompetence for keeping software up to date, not on the open source software itself. I just wanted to make that point clear. It's not WordPress and Drupal's fault. It's their incompetence for not keeping their software up to date. That's where the issue is.
You don't buy a car and not change the oil in it, even when it's new.
So yeah, it's funny you bring that up. We recently got a new car. I'm almost going on like 4,000 miles, and I haven't seen the change oil light come on. So I'm kind of curious. When do I change my oil? See, look at that. What a great segue.
Hey. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into that, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I haven't
some
changed
cars
it yet.
Are different.
It was a brand new car.
Yeah, I used to have a Volvo, and that thing was like every 12,000 miles or something like that. It was crazy.
So I told you we had a lot to cover, a lot to talk about, and we pretty much went through that hour talking about all kinds of things WordPress. But now that you're up to date, oh, and by the way, next Wednesday, I don't know if it's going to be on Tuesday or if they're going to do it on a Wednesday, but it's release day for WordPress 4.5. So hopefully when we're on the show next Wednesday night, we could tell you, hey, go update your sites of WordPress 4.5, and we'll cover some of the features in it, because there's going to be quite a few release posts about it, and talk about some of the features, and maybe Marcus and I could talk about what's on our wish list for 4.6. We'll get into that next week. But without further ado, Marcus, why don't we do some plugin picks of the week?
Oh, I've been waiting all week for this one. This one is called Query All the Post Types. And this plugin is pretty cool, because what it does is it provides a really easy way to view a full list of all the different post types that you've got registered on your WordPress installation. Really good to see, especially if you're auditing a new client, to see what kind of trickery has been going on as far as custom post types and things like that from previous work. And that's exactly what I used this one for. So, here's a good example. If somebody registered a portfolio custom post type, you'd figure that the post type would be called portfolio, but it could be called, portfolio_view or portfolio post or something like that. So this helps you kind of alleviate and sort of sift through the sand and pull all of these different custom post types out and bring them to light to where you can see what they are. So it's called Query All the Post Types. Next one, Jeff, is called GoWorks Styler. And GoWorks is relatively new into the plugin scene. In fact, this and one other one that they introduced at the same time are the only plugins that they've created thus far. What this does is actually adds new buttons to the WordPress visual editor, allowing you to do a lot of things that even the visual editor itself cannot do. It can make custom colored boxes. It can do all kinds of different buttons with different opacities and different things like that. It does image padding. It does borders. All of the stuff that WordPress Core actually kind of used to do that they took away, plus a lot more in terms of buttons and everything else. And you can do custom styling and that kind of thing right there within the plugin itself. So I really love this plugin, and it's kind of replaced a lot of other things and actually enhanced stuff like the Visual Composer. I can do stuff in Visual Composer and then actually use the the rich text editor within WordPress to do a lot more. So it's really cool. Try it out. It's in the repository. It's called GoWorks Styler. And finally, Jeff, this one is called Chronological Posts. And quite simply, this does just one thing, and it reverses the default post order throughout your site. So instead of the newest thing being on top all the time in terms of being presented, it actually puts the oldest one in there. So if you had something in maybe book format or script format or journal format or something like that that you wanted to do and you wanted somebody to start from the very beginning, this is one plugin that you can use to do that. So it's called Chronological Posts. And those three are my plugin picks of the week.
Sounds like a plugin that can come in handy depending on how you want to publish an ebook or publish a series of articles, maybe into a story format. You could do chronological posts. That way readers are always starting from the beginning of the book versus in the middle or in the end. No.
Yeah, or a diary, like republishing someone's diary as a blog.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To where you can start from the beginning.
Yeah, so there's that too. It's pretty cool plugins. And let's see, I noticed that we have a big event coming up on this weekend, WordCamp London.
Yes, 3-day event, actually. So I just noticed that they were going on this weekend. There's a lot going, a couple of them going on, I think next weekend. And then the week after that is WordCamp San Diego, which I'll be at, and a number of other people.
And the end of April is WordCamp Chicago. I'll be there. So can't wait to go see Chi-Town again.
Excellent.
Definitely looking forward to that. And in terms of announcements for the show, we won't have a guest next week. We'll be focused on WordPress 4.5 and some of the other news in the WordPress world. But for maybe the first time in the history of the show, we're going to have back-to-back guests, female guests. So that'll be pretty cool. So on April 20th, we're going to have Mika Epstein, also known as Half Elf or Ipstenu, and she's one of the guardians of the WordPress plugin directory. So I can't wait to have her on to talk about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on for approving plugins in the directory and all the things that she does to keep users safe, from approving plugins in the directory. And maybe give us some tidbits or some insight into maybe new things they're doing now to make sure that plugin incidents like the one we talked about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Marcus, where the malware got into one or a bad user took over a plugin with active sites and it turned into a security headache. We'll talk to her about that and see what went on during that.
Yeah, we've been trying to get her on the show since actually last June when we saw her speak at WordCamp Orange County. So
I'm looking forward to that. And then at the end of the month, April 27th, we're going to be visited by Andrea Middleton, she's a lovely guest. Loved having her on the show last year. And we're going to be diving into all things WordCamp, believe it or not. So we're going to learn about the deputy program. We're going to learn about the new subsidiary that's part of the WordPress Foundation that all the funds travel through now. And there's tax reasons and other reasons why They're doing that. Liability, of course, comes to mind. And we're just going to talk about WordCamps and all that cool stuff in general. So that's we'll be having her on the show at the end of the month. And then, hell, we'll be in May. And by the time May 4th comes around, we'll have to do a recap of WordCamp Chicago. I have plenty to talk about.
Excellent. Yeah, we've got a little bit of a cycle this summer. I know that I'm shooting for WordCamp Boston, which is July 18th. That's going to be a trek. That'll be fun to meet some new people on the East Coast in terms of the WordPress community. So a lot going on. I can't wait to do it.
Yeah, near the end of July, I think it's July. Let me check really quick here. July 30th. The state of Oklahoma is having their first WordCamp this year, and I've been waiting for this for a long time, and it's going to be WordCamp Oklahoma City. It's going to be a one-day event on July 30th, and I'm flying down there. I'm going to be participating in that. But
Are you really going to go to that? Man, I bet there's some kick-ass barbecue there.
Yeah, so I'm going to go check that out. But my partner in crime, Sarah Gooding, lives in Tulsa, so I'll be able to meet up with her and have a little, you know, do one of those cool company meetups.
Yeah.
No, nice. Talk about get down to some tavern business, you know, in person. Sometimes you got to do that. So looking forward to a great summer. And of course, at the end of May, we won't be doing a show because I will be on vacation. I'm actually taking my wife back down to the Smoky Mountains, and I'm bringing my dog, who just recently turned 12 years old. So my wife is overly excited about that, and I am too, because we love the Smoky Mountains. So it'll be our week to get away. And, man, Marcus, it'll be a great time.
Good. It'll be a nice week off. Hopefully I can get my stupid membership stuff done by then.
So all in all, we got a lot to look forward to. A lot of things going on with this show. A couple of cool guests coming on board. So just stay tuned. It's going to be a fun ride. And we're glad that you're along and you continue listening to the show. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. That's JeffroR0. And Marcus,
can find me at my own website, marcuscouch.com. My membership coach website is membershipcoach.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at marcuscouch.
Fantastic. And how's that membership site coming along?
It's interesting, Jeff, because I'm doing a lot of editing, and I've got somebody that I hired as an outsource that's helping with me with titles and Zooms and all that stuff, and it's working out. I had to go through a couple people, but it's finally going. But it's really cool because I've actually been sending a lot of stuff out through MailChimp for the people that sign up to the pre-launch and asking them kind of ahead of time, what are there big perils in terms of membership sites, or what are they trying to get over, or their hurdles or whatever? So I've got like 20 or 30 email streams going in Gmail right now, back and forth with people that are, you know, interested in it. And frankly, it's kind of made me want to shift part of the curriculum in a different direction based on some of the problems that people are telling me about.
They're basically telling you the content you should be writing.
Of course, and I would be an idiot not to make it, right?
Right.
So that's helped me a great deal. And just seeing some of the different types of membership sites that people want to put together, every email is different in terms of what people want and what their requirements are. And that's why this is such an art form in terms of putting a successful site like this together. So I've enjoyed the process thus far. I can't wait for it to officially launch and actually start doing masterminds and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be great.
Nice. So you have to keep us informed. And with that, everybody, legitimately, this time, peace. We're out. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.